The Competitive 40K Network presents Art of War.
Art of War.
Strategy and tactics. Discussions with the best players on the planet. Now your host, Nick Nanavati.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Art of War podcast. I'm very pleased to announce our guest this week, Chris Haynes from Canada. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Chris has just come off a hot win with none other than the Golden Boy Custodes up in Canada at the All Is Dust DT. And that's really exciting. We're here to talk about it. We're here to break down the army list that Chris used, the tactics, the strategies, the ins, the outs, the play-by-plays. That's all we're going to talk about. So in part one of this two-part show, we're going to talk about Chris Haynes, the man, the captain of Team Canada, the international team for Warhammer representing Canada. We're going to talk about how he's kind of climbed the competitive Warhammer ladder to assume that throne, then what that looks like a little logistically, you know, like what are those troubles and trials and struggles of a team captain for an international Warhammer team? And then how does that affect the play? You know, Chris has obviously still got it. He's got the custodies. He's winning tournaments. We're going to talk about his army list. We're going to talk about how his army works in both the team setting and the single setting and how you can manipulate your play to account for both. And then for those of you who want the nitty gritty, the good stuff, you can join us in part two. That's going to be on AOW40K.com, our Patreon. $5 a month gets you access to this part two, along with 230 plus other episodes of Art of War content and our amazing Discord server. In part two, we're going to discuss how it works, the games, game-by-game breakdowns, tactics, strategies, all nine yards. So, Chris, I'm very excited to have you here. How are you doing?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Love to hear it. Yeah, we've played Warhammer a few times over the years. You've been playing the game for a long time. How long has it been?
Well, I started, like, I'm 37 now, and I started in my teenage years. So I've been playing competitively since I finished college, going to, you know, pretty much a tournament a month ever since then. And that would have been, you know, around the 2007 timeframe is when I started getting real serious.
Wow. Yeah. So basically after college around 2007, you know, you started getting serious. It's like a few years after I just started playing the game at all. You've seen the game evolve, right? From its infancy state when there's like you drive 3-4 hours to go to your local RTT to now, you know, there's super majors all over the world every weekend. How is your progression as a player gone in relation to the game's progression as a professional game?
Yeah, like I started off back then and I was maybe like a medium player at most of my events, but I played a lot of events. So I would always take the army that I owned, which was like Deathwing at the time, and I kind of played, you know, essentially what I had, and then I would go and, you know, I'd always lose a game or two and just kind of keep playing. And kind of back then, as you said, yeah, it was mostly RTTs. There was a couple bigger events and they were like, you know, bigger was like 50 or 60 people at that time. And then, so as it evolved, I didn't really start getting super competitive until about, actually Warhammer Fantasy died, because I used to play Warhammer Fantasy primarily. And then when that died, I switched over to 40K and tried to really play hyper-competitive. And I played a lot of like Eldar and stuff like that and traveled more to the big kind of American GTs at the time, which were pretty much, if you did, there was one or two in Canada that we would play in every year. And if I wanted to play in kind of a really big one, we'd have to go to either like Du Bois in Rochester or like Adepticon at that time or Nova Open. So,
yeah, I remember that. Those were kind of the big tournament names for so long. And it's only kind of when LVO started happening and then subsequently the independent tournament circuit and then Games Workshop getting involved that we got this like blossoming season. Have you found the competition level as of the game as a whole different now versus then? Like, is the game harder or players better?
Yeah, so I feel like the average player just knows more and lists are more available. So like people can go on and you get a lot of like newer players with maybe more advanced lists right now than maybe you used to. Back then, you used to be able to kind of just take some like broken stuff and kind of force your way through to do kind of well in events. And then, but yeah, I definitely think the average quality's gone up. And anyway, it's like people seem to know more about the game. They know more about what your list does or what other people's list does. And there's just a lot, like you can't really catch people off guard. So way back when, I used to do a lot of things where I would just take a lot of like really extreme stuff, and then you would catch like everybody off guard and nobody would have heard of it. And I think now you have to really play very well on the table, and you can't just get by on like list design and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. Back then, there was such an information gap, and metas were so isolated and different. There wasn't a centralized knowledge zone for 40K, and the content creation for the game was so much less. So basically, there was a real advantage to coming up with a different style of list that maybe no one has heard of, as opposed to playing the meta thing and you know, keeping it a secret, unveiling it at the tournament, kicking everyone's ass. You know, the culture of the game is so different back then too. I think the accessibility of all the knowledge has made it so that all the players, at least with a quick Google search, can know what the top lists in Warhammer are. A quick YouTube search will tell you how to play it, and then, you know, practice makes perfect from that point. But you can get your fundamentals really easily now, which is just totally different. With that emphasis being pushed kind of on more player skill, Chris, how have you found you've grown and developed from like the medium player that you called yourself way back when to, you know, winning super majors and captain of Team Canada? What has that progression been look like over time?
Yeah. So like this is still going back, 10, 12 years. I don't keep track too closely. And yeah, like 6th and 7th edition, I was playing tournaments, you know, multiple a month, and I was playing really hard and kind of really developing. And then I switched personally more into this team style. It used to be the ETC, WTC style. And so once I made that switch, I actually saw a decrease in my singles results because I was focusing more on obscure kind of factions and obscure lists to kind of help my team out and practice throughout the years. So I had this huge spike in 6th and 7th where I did quite well. And then around maybe 8th edition, I kind of dipped. And, I was still doing really well. Like, we have a lot of team events in Canada. I founded the Canhammer Team Tournament many, like 10 years ago. And that was kind of the first taste of teams here. And so people here have been generally getting more into that. And I've been playing primarily team events. Like, I go to Adepticon, we play in the 4-man team, or we go to Europe, and then we play all these local team events and try to do some in the States if we can, but it's getting hard. And at that same time in my life, I had 3 children and I got married and I got a promotion at work. So I definitely dipped for a bit, but I still managed to perform really well at team events. So I kind of kept my captaincy going, for lack of a better term. And then ever since COVID hit, I actually struggled to come back as a singles player. It was just really hard for me. I was focusing too much on the team stuff. And then this last maybe 6 months, you and I played at the World Championships of Warhammer there.
Yeah, we did.
And you kicked my ass, by the way. It was a great game. And then, so this year I've actually kind of took a step back. I noticed that my personal rankings were suffering. I haven't won anything in a while. I haven't performed in the singles environment. Like, I still win multiple team events a year and been doing really well with that. And, you know, I went to the WTC last summer and I practiced my ass off playing in RTTs and stuff. And just with team practice, and I was the 3rd highest scoring Custodes player as a defender. Behind, of course, John, who
that's pretty phenomenal.
He's asked a lot more. Yeah,
that's a competitive score.
Yeah, in the teams, singles, I lost 2 games out of the 6. But so this last actually January, this is a kind of a new thing for me. Is I was like, I'm refocusing on my singles performance. Back in the day, I used to put so much effort into my singles list, and I used to really focus on them and try to win events and like things that you've talked about before, like, you know, for custom terrain, like, practicing on the train for that event and building a list to win that event, not just taking my team's list to get practice games at singles events for a potential team event, right?
So is that what you mean by focusing on singles versus teams, like really taking that event as the goal, studying that event, practicing, tailoring your list for that event, that meta, as opposed to using like a local RTT, GT, whatever it is, as practice for World Team Championships as your premier event?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, if you would look at the Canadian ELO and stuff, I was actually ranked very low. I didn't even play in GTs last year. I prioritized just playing in more RTTs to get more games done. And then, of course, go and play in these team events. Right. And so this last January, one of my kind of New Year's resolutions was that I'm actually going to take serious the singles events. And so that this All Is Dust is the first GT that I've actually won since COVID, which is a pretty dry spell for me. You know, I've still won RTTs and team events and stuff like that, but mainly, I don't even know if I've won too many RTTs, but because we mostly play with the Team Canada guys. But anyway, beyond the point, it's like I kind of needed to express myself in a singles environment and show that I could still do it. And I was also just getting frustrated with, you know, not showing up and kind of, you know, having those bad games. And one thing actually you said to me at the WCW, which was really interesting, is we played the same army. When you and I played round one, I believe, and we played the same army, and you looked at my list and went like, I tested your list, like, because you were playing Chaos Space Marines as well, and you were like, but I realized that this and this didn't work, and that's why I evolved into my list. And I was like, yeah, like, I didn't actually practice for this, and, you know. Wow, I've never played. That was one of my first times playing on GW terrain, right? So So flash forward, because I only played WTC terrain, which of course you know is very different, right? With the angles and the way you can do things, you can take.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And is that like you play WTC practice year round? So that's why when it came time for World Championships, you were just like, oh, let's wing it. And then like you just took like a very generic version of Good Stuff Chaos Space Marines, right? Like anyone could have looked at your list and like, that was a good list, but you know, the refinement was perhaps missing.
Yeah, that was one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is like I'm a strong believer in personal style. And so I had switched to Chaos Space Marines because I didn't play them at the WTC. Like WTC, we had a Chaos Space Marine player. I just kind of switched them because I had them and I thought it'd be cool and they were broken right now. Like they were like really powerful. I kind of did it for the wrong reasons, right? And my results really show that.
It's so funny that you said that, Chris, because even though like you look at me at the World Championships playing Chaos Space Marines, practiced on the terrain, practiced the list, and you're like taking away lessons from that, I feel the same exact way, dude. I literally like I took my Chaos Space Marine list, I practiced it, refined it, I wanted to do really well, I was practicing to do really well, but I also felt like, you know, even with that, it didn't match my play style. I talk about this all the time, like it didn't match my play style. I went 5-3 that tournament, which for me is not as well as I would have liked to have done, even in that field. And, you know, I think I'm such on your side with this, like find a list that gels with you is really the point.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I kind of think if I would have taken Custodes, which is, you know, obviously what I've been practicing since the edition dropped for the, like, you know, the World Team Championship, maybe I would have had the same result, even because they were in a rough spot there, but I probably would have had the same result, right? And maybe felt better about it. But yeah, so there's that aspect of it is like focus on your army, focus on you, focus on singles. You know, this is a story, this is a bit of an old story, but there was a GT in Ottawa I went to, and I was playing my sisters at the time. This was last edition, so it's a bit old, but they had recently, we were playing kind of the old rules, and there was a new balance slate that came out, and they had changed that, like the amount of warlord traits and the amount of relics you could have taken. You know, that dates me. That's a while ago. But, and I went up there and I was like, well, I'm practicing for the WTC, so I'm going to take my nerfed list with less warlord traits so that I just don't learn wrong and like develop wrong. And then you end up losing, right? Or like by a margin on certain games. And you know, I kind of felt bad. And I think to a little certain extent, and maybe I'm oversharing here, is I felt like I was using my WTC as like practice as like a crutch to maybe not put in that little extra. But anyway, flashback to All Is Dust, which was this GT. That was the first time that I went into a tournament in a GT, a 2-day event in a while, that I felt really ready for it. Like I had tested the list, like, cause Custodes right now have multiple builds. One of them is like the double tank build. And then there's the infantry build that I took, which we'll talk about later. And, you know, I really practiced both those lists, for this singles kind of environment. Now it helped me that we were using WTC terrain at this event. So that gives me a little bit of a boost in practice, but you know, I really focused on what I thought could win the event and what I thought would help me personally do the best I could at the event. And it was the first time I really felt that confident in my list and that confident in kind of the direction I was moving in for a singles. But it's also a new thing for me to focus on that. So I knew in the last couple of years, but yeah.
Right. So it's almost like you have like a opposite kind of approach to what I'm currently doing, which is kind of cool to see as well. I've been a singles player for so long that kind of went into professional Warhammer and teaching as my focus. And then I felt like my singles play was slipping. But to kind of get over that. I've just been diving deep into teams, and I'm using singles as a way to practice teams, but not so all in as you are. Like, I still play on different terrain formats and different army lists and things like that. So I'm in a way focusing more on teams, whereas you're focusing on singles to kind of get back to where you were. And that's where you're seeing these awesome results, Wet All's Dust. And I think that's so awesome. Have you found that your ability to play for the team has suffered at all? Or has this actually helped you just become a better player overall?
Well, I guess we'll know this summer. You know, we just recently won a teams event in Montreal. And I'm preparing for another big teams event in June. Cause I run the biggest teams event in Canada, so I don't get to play in it anymore. Because, you know, Darren used to run it for me. Essentially, I owned it with a couple other people, and then he would run it so we could play and practice.
But oh, yeah.
Now that he's left the hobby, he does a board game podcast now and does board game stuff. So since he left, I've had to take over that mantle. But to answer your question, I can't see how it would hurt. I think, as I said earlier, I think it was maybe I was doing a little bit of a crutch. You know, I'm preparing this army for teams, so I won't switch. One of the other things I did this year, which is interesting, is this is my first year since 2010 not going to Adepticon. And so what I found with going to Adepticon is we would try and win the best overall team or the best general team at the four-man team. But that format doesn't help me for WTC, and it doesn't help me for singles. Any models I paint for that doesn't help me for singles or even WTC, because you're doing like a really high-end, like 1,000-point army with three other people. And so I actually cut Adepticon this year so that I could focus more on WTC and teams. And so I guess like time will tell whether or not it helps me, but I think it does. Because when you look at a lot of the good WTC players, they also transition really well into singles. You do have to change your mindset a little bit. Like Francois came over for a game a few days ago. And, you know, sometimes I find with the team environment, you tend to play too safe. And so, because you're too, you're still playing to win the game and get your pairings, but sometimes those pairings kind of force you to maybe play a bit safer than you would in singles. And I think singles a lot of the time is just going for it, because like, right, the consequence of failure in singles is so much higher than failing in teams, right? You're just out, right? So.
Right. So like, I completely agree. Like the way you play singles and teams can definitely vary, especially within the role of your team, you know, defenders and attackers and different lists and stuff. When I look at your list for the All is Dust tournament that you won, it was six Bricks Custodes. The 3 inches of Custodes card, 3 inches of Wardens. I won't spoil it too much. Kind of did, but that's really what it was. Is that a team list that you are practicing in a singles environment, or is that really where you think the singles army should be?
So this is the list like that I think is better for singles, and some people might disagree, because I think it gives you more of a chance to tie in the hard games. So that's why I took the six Bricks, is I felt like a lot of the people right now in teams playing stuff, and I could say the Codex is going to come out and Custodes are going to completely change soon, so it's I don't mind spilling secrets, I guess, but a lot of teams have been playing like double tanks, and I've been trying to play double tanks for a lot of team games, because when you play the double Caladius tanks, it gives you a couple greens, like big wins into some armies, and it really doesn't hurt you that much into some of your worst matchups. And so that just allows you to pair better and to get better scores, or to force other people on your team to get better pairings. And so when I looked at those, are the two lists I was kind of testing, and when I really looked at it, I thought that this six Brick list, because in the singles environment, like, you just have to win by like 1 point, or in this case we're using differential scoring, so you just had to win by 6 points in a game. And I just felt like against the widest range of opponents and ranges of armies, this list would just allow me to get the most ties to wins, right? And if I did lose, it would be like a very minor loss, and maybe I'd be able to place really high, right? So that was kind of the theory going in. Whereas like a lot of people now, you're seeing that double Caladius build and they really want to take that. But I find that there's just a couple matches like the mirror and stuff like that, that you wouldn't take in a teams game, that just that Caladius list could fall apart in.
Right. That totally makes sense, which is interesting because you would think that the Caladius version with the extra tanks helps more in singles because it gives you kind of a more all-around approach where you can actually shoot people back instead of just camping objectives and stuff. But that's just my take. You know, I don't play the army like Custodes like you do, so I want to leave it up to you. Chris, why don't you break down what the list you took to All His Dust was, kind of top to bottom, read it out for us.
Yeah, so it's pretty standard Custodes. So I took a Blade Champ. And then I took a second Blade Champ with Ceaseless Hunter. Ceaseless Hunter is fantastic. It allows you to play an objective and score just a ridiculous amount of points. Then I took a Shield Captain. He's primarily in there for the basically the free minus one damage strat, which is because like Custodes really need CP. He has the Veiled Blade, which allows him to triple his OC once per game, as well as it gives him like 9 attacks. And you can use double to triple Kataz. Then I'll get into, when I get to his unit, I can get into why he's specifically in the list. Then I took Trajan because he's just one of the best characters in the entire game, in my opinion. I took 3 units of Custodian Guard. They're all minimum units of 4. They're all pretty much the same. I took a Vexilla in every unit. One unit, I took an extra shield just for the kind of the extra wounds, because the shields give you a 4th wound. And so sometimes there's some damage 3 armies out there that you just want that extra 4 wound model in it just to curb the damage. And then I took a unit of prosecutors, 4 of them, just for the standard scoring. 3 units of 5 wardens, fully loaded with spears and vexillas. And then I took Lord Inquisitor Kyria Draxus. Now, to go back to that kind of captain, I put him, the shield captain specifically. I used to run the 3 Blade Champs in the list, and then I found that like generally you only need 2 units to have a lot of reach, and they can cover most of the board. And then that Shield Captain going in a Warden unit basically allows them to act like a brick and just kind of hold that flank that maybe your opponent is pushing into. And because he has that minus one damage and he can triple his OC, you can get those cheeky like extra turn where I score that objective just an extra turn or denied an extra turn. So he's really integral to the list. I think people that just take the 3 Blade Champs, which was me at one point in time, a few months ago or a month, 2 months ago, you're definitely missing out on that one piece. Draxus is there because she's fantastic into a lot of the elf matches or Eldar. And, she can go into a Custodes guard unit. That guard unit then can shoot twice. And by, virtue of her being in there, she can also shoot twice once per game. And then they reroll wounds on objectives, which also gives her reroll wounds on objectives. So she does just a ton of damage, and she gives you that out of line of sight shooting, which really helps you to, clear those little scoring units. And, a lot of Eldar armies, which do kind of scare me sometimes, they take a lot of little units. And if she can, kill one or two of them early, you can really curb their scoring. So that's the list.
Beautiful. So a pretty clean, easy 6 units of Custodes, 3 Wardens, 3 Guard, Drax as a Shield Captain, and 2 Blade Champs to round it out. I guess I only have a few questions on how it works from a strategic standpoint, right? It's like pretty self-explanatory in a lot of ways, but like you have 6 bricks, 6 units, plus a 5 prosecutor, like little crap squad to just chill out and do some actions and backfield screening. What is your placement with these units? Are you reserving stuff? Are you deploying them and just rushing them all on the line and running forward? How much are you married to terrain? These are the kinds of questions I'm asking.
Yeah, so in almost every game, I ingress Trajan in a unit of guard, and he's kind of my positioning piece where there's a lot of things that, are half damage. So he's kind of there to keep those units honest, things like Magnus and stuff like that. Like if you ingress or deep strike Trajan, it kind of forces the Thousand Suns player to screen out really well and hide Magnus till like turn 4. He's also really good into like Catans if you have to play into them, and he can come in and just wipe them. So I keep him off the board. And then I also generally, depending on, most opponents, I'll keep the sisters off the board as well to kind of come in and grab objectives. And then what I like to do is I like to put one of the 4-man Custodes guard unit with no characters somewhat close to the middle in terrain. And they're kind of there for turn 1. I pop them up behind a ruin. I put one of them on an objective, and then they could do tricksy stuff like, you shoot them off. I pull one or two models, and then I just grow a Custodes back and retake the middle. They can also do actions and cards, because I take basically, I play tactical almost every game. And there's a couple exceptions like Knights and things like that where I don't play tactical, but most of them I do just for the CP. And so I'll use that four-man guard unit to just hold that middle and kind of not throw away, but use them to tricksy get early game points without risking either brick.
Because they require a real response, right? So like your opponent, you use them to get the game going for you. They put some anti-tank shooting out there, something capable of killing Custodes Guard, and then you just kill that. And now it's harder to kill the remaining five units of your army.
Correct. Yeah. And the three Warden units, I kind of use them. I spread them out. I usually put the Blade Champs on either flank, one of them behind a ruin that's maybe closer to the opponent. It depends on the deployment. And so they'll use that Ceaseless Hunter to also trick and kind of bait an objective or to control an objective. And then I use the other one, generally other Blade Champ, kind of left center to kind of put pressure there. And then I usually use the other Brick of Wardens with the Captain on the other flank. And I try to like take the board, not necessarily turn one, but this army, and sorry, the last unit of guard, they go on my back objective normally, which does feel like kind of a waste if they have Draxxus or whatnot. But I find that sometimes you want to just ensure that your opponent can't get back there. If they do, they have to invest in that. And then Draxxus, because she's on your home, usually strung forward, she can still shoot things and then move forward. But it really depends on my opponent. You know, if I play an Eldar guy, I'll use Draxxus more aggressively because I need to get range onto things. But, you know, all these tactics are army. It really matters who you're playing, how you deploy. But the gist of it is, yeah, I kind of deploy them. I post up. And I try to not get shot for the first two turns, if I can, hide and just score as many points as possible. And then I either, you know, counter charge if the opponent pushed into me, or then I push really hard into them late game and just try to put that pressure on so that they can't then take my objectives from me because I'm kind of into them. And if they do get behind me and take an objective, I can just take theirs. It's pretty standard infantry plan. I say that, but there's a lot of nuance to how you hide things and stuff. Like, I guess for people listening, like when you take a Vexilla, you have to be very careful because that could be seen in a lot of ruins. So you have to like string it back behind, which is just basic unit placement. And then, you know, you want to make sure your characters are more towards the opponent. And then usually I'll kill the Vexillas first and then bring them back later game if I need to, just to eliminate the line of sight issues that they give you.
Right, so there's just a lot of different ways you can kind of try to get the board control in this matchup. And then through that, like Ceaseless Hunter on the one flank, is that typically your expansion objective? Like if you're trying to, if there's three objectives in No Man's Land, is that going to go on the flank that is the closest to you, kind of easiest to defend, or the harder one where you're going to try to attack it?
So it depends on the deployment, but usually I'll put it on my right, which is the closest. And then it kind of allows me to post them up on a wall. It's also on WTC tables. The right objective is usually behind cover, and I find usually the middle is out in the open. And so I'll put them up. Basically, the Ceaseless Hunter unit goes on any objective that has a ruin blocking half of it that I can access from a staging point safely turn one. And then you basically put that model on the edge of the objective or behind a wall covering that whole objective. And you basically tell your opponent, like, you know, if you move on to this objective, I'm then going to either move on to the objective, or if you have that unit kind of maybe one model in front of the wall, if the opponent moves on to that objective then tries to shoot you off, you can just move it back then behind the wall and he loses all the shooting that he committed to that unit. It really just depends on what he commits to that flank, but generally that Ceaseless unit is looking specifically for that. So it really depends on the table layout and the mission, because if you put it on something that's more out in the open or is a little bit too far away, then you're just not getting value out of that enhancement.
In WTC, there's an element of defender and attacker, and attackers don't get to choose their table, and they have a narrow range of armies that they can potentially play against. And defenders, you know, they're going to have to play against almost anything. One refusal, and then whatever else is what you get. But you get to pick your board. Is that a factor in this list, or is it pretty neutral, can flex roles, that kind of thing? How do you view it in the team pairings?
So now this is like before the balance late in that. In the WTC last year, I was the defender, first defender every round but one. And so that's how we used it. Right now, I don't, it is less dependent, I would say, on table pick. So I think you can, you still want to get that table pick, especially when you're talking team events, because there's a couple tables that custodies just dominate on. And one of them is like the massive L table. I forget the number of it, but it's like the big L's where there's two ruins kind of put together. And you have these huge staging L's. I actually played against Italy on that table, and it was like a terrible matchup for me, but I was able to win it just because of our table pick. So I guess to long answer short, yeah, I think it matters. You don't want to get custodies on too light of a table. You don't want me, you know, if I'm playing against a Tau guy as well, you don't want them to be able to get early angles to my units. You really want to have your wardens able to hide for one or two turns and then pop their 4+ on that crucial third turn, take the shooting, and then dish out all the pain, right, in combat.
When you're playing this army, and this leads back to my table choice question, whether attacking, defending, you mentioned how you need the Ceaseless Hunter unit on the objective with a ruin partially covering it, which isn't an uncommon thing in the WTC format, so most tables will have that, but guaranteeing it would require some level of defense. And then on top of that, you obviously took this to a singles turn where you get the table you get, and if it's good, bad, and different, you know, you play it. And when you don't have that kind of control, you were clearly able to make it work for et al's dust. Is this the type of army that when push comes to shove, you can just shove 35 wardens and guard in their face and say, you have one turn to kill all this? Or is that really not a strategy you ever employ?
Yeah, I would say that's I think that's a terrible idea to just shove it in their face. It does kind of sound like that's what I'm saying, but it's very crucial to score the points you can score and position for a later game in cover. I think, I've played a few people that were caught off guard by me. They said, like, every custodian player I ever played shoved into me, and I beat them. And they said, like, you played, like, I just kind of take half the board and just kind of chill as long as I'm in the lead and then push out late game when they don't have enough turns to clear you. Because a lot of armies can clear one or two custodies units, especially, like, if you shove out turn one or turn two too early, you could theoretically pop all your 4+'s, and then they have three turns to, like, whittle you down and kill your army. It's not unkillable. So even I would say, like, you just need to know it's really tough to coach people on custodies, because I get a lot of people asking me that, and it's like, you know, you have to hide, you have to protect your models, you have to delay the 4+ as late as possible in your game, but you also have to know when to push. And against certain armies that can't necessarily deal with you, you do have to push into them. You know, things like guard, if you hide, you'll just lose your army over the course of five turns. You need to be more aggressive. And things like Dark Eldar or Eldar, you have to be more aggressive into them because they will just outscore you and kind of chill back. Whereas there's a lot of interesting armies like Death Guard and stuff like that I tend to play for, and Thousand Suns. I actually play very passive against Thousand Suns and just take my half of the board and kind of force him to kind of make plays and trade units early, right, if he has to. So
that almost sounds like a strategic matchup by matchup level, which is something we totally talk about in part two of this podcast. But it's really interesting that you kind of brought that into your strategy. It's because it's knowing when to push, right, with the custodies. Like, if they have an incredibly offensive army and you just run, you know, Charge of the Light Brigade straight into it, you're mathematically going to just get shot off the table in a few turns and punched to death. So you've adapted your strategy to account for that. Like, running into Thousand Suns who say no armor saves, take double Doombolt, you're probably going to die. But, you know, you can play that game a little more cagey, passively hide behind terrain, force them to come to you, because you can really easily control 3 out of 5 objectives, or even 4 out of 5 objectives, by just sneakily getting your custodies on there throughout the course of the game and scoring tactical cards as they come up. Do you find with your army playstyle like this, tactical cards are difficult to achieve because you have 7 units total?
Yeah, so I usually do okay with tactical cards. I play the game for primary. So I play to deny and score primary, and I try to win on primary. And then the tactical cards, I just do my darndest to stay in the game and try to match you, or just, you know, a lot of people do outscore me by a couple points on secondaries. It's very normal, but I think the custodies really, really shine with the OC3 on the units and the primary game. And I think most of the tactical cards you can score. The thing about custodies is you only want one. Like, the worst thing that could ever happen to a Custodes army is that you get two really easy to score tactical cards turn one. Because most of the time, you actually only want to score one card. You want to get that extra CP, and you want to use that CP for always strike first to bring guys back alive, and just all that kind of good stuff. You don't want to be really just motoring through them. And so, you know, like a lot of times, I won't even score a card intentionally turn one that I could score just to ensure, especially if I go first, just to ensure that I have that extra CP in their turn, right? For, you know, minus one damage or any of that stuff.
When you're playing this army, it sounds to me like you're dominating primary, but one of the best ways to dominate primary is to just kill your opponent. Is, and like with the tactical card being treated for command points, it kind of goes in line with that line of thinking, right? You're just offense, offense, offense. And I don't mean offense in the sense of sprint at your opponent. I mean, like from a strategic standpoint, they can't score points if they're dead. Your army is not a points factory, especially on the secondary side of things. And then primary, they can choose to like not fight you on objective for like five primary turn. You'll score 20 primary turn or whatever, and you'll max it out 50 to 25 by the end of the game. So that's obviously not a winning strategy for them. And then if they try to engage you, you basically just turn all on the offense and just kill them all. Do you find that your game plans typically end in you tabling your opponent, or are you often the one who has few models left alive and you're just barely holding on to a points lead?
I say both happen. So a lot of games, though, I do table. People are come very close. Sometimes there's the little cheeky units you just can't get to. But yeah, I definitely try that. And one thing I like to do as well is kind of use my shooting to clear stuff if I can. So I try to like use my advance to get some shots around a corner and whittle units around and then charge and kill another unit. And so a lot of it is you just take, just like if you try not to take the objective too early, or if you do and you hide, and then when they put a unit forward, you have to try to like trade really effectively. So try to, you know, charge multiple units or shoot and charge other units. And you can definitely, yeah, like sometimes I do table it, but like I had a game like before this event against Thousand Sons, and you know, I didn't actually table him. I didn't kill that much of his army. I ended up losing that game. It was like an 11-9 on WTC scale, but it was really like interesting in that regard, is that like I just kind of hunkered down, held my objectives. That was a team game, of course. So I was just going for the 9 points type thing. But yeah, you just have to know when, because there's a lot of games where I'll push in and I'll get the bloodlust. And, you know, once you kill somebody's midboard presence, if you, you know, you don't need to push in and table them. You know, you've won the game. So just hold on to your win and hold the objectives. But some games, yeah, there's something so lethal in the backfield or coming in that you have to go and tie it up, right? So it's hard to say. I think a lot of my answers, which people get frustrated with when they ask me, is like, it's very situational. And I'm a very situational guy. And one thing I like to do with my Custodes is, because it's such a small army, is I like to take a lot of time to think and make sure that I am using my chess clock, if we use a chess clock, or using my half of that game time to make sure that I'm making those right decisions of when to push, when not to push, what to show, what not to show. And yeah.
I love it, Chris. I think ultimately this is the sign of a great general, right? Like understanding the tempos and the ebbs and the flows of the in-game decision-making. And that's really what we're going to talk about in part two of this episode. So for part two is going to be for our patrons. You can sign up on patreon.com/AAOW40K. Again, $5 a month gets you access to this show along with 230 plus other episodes and our Discord server. So Chris and I are going to go over there. And we're going to talk about the matchups. We're going to talk about the All's Dust tournament round by round by round and learn about the different tempos and paces and tactics that Chris used to actually win these games. So whether you're interested in Custodes, interested in teams, or just interested in getting better at Warhammer, I implore you to go check out that Patreon. It's $5 a month. Please support the show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thank you, Chris, for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we will catch you next week.
Like what you just listened to? Check out Art of War Down Under and Art of War Unbroken on the competitive 40K network. TheArtOfWar40K.com.